Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. We're 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. Lots to cover today from what's going on today and over the weekend. Some gun violence over the weekend again, and some details about some gun violence today even. We'll talk about some of what's going on. Also, some interesting write-ups about the Muslim population. What if they don't want to be like us? And turns out Hillary Clinton wasn't ever going to be indicted by the FBI. Surprise, surprise. Details of that and more on the way on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. It's Monday. We are getting back to work. Whether you like it or not, you've got to go. Somebody's got to go to work. So, but we do like it. We're glad to be back. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here. A pretty good weekend for us. I'm a Packer fan. Packers win, barely. Mm-hmm. Bills win convincingly.
In a romp.
Where did that come from?
I actually predicted it. You can ask my brother. I told him the Bills are desperate. They're going to play like bullies today, and they did it.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they won, somewhat surprising, just because the team was so good, the Cardinals. Yeah. But the way they won, that was surprising. And that's one of the good things the NFL has going for it. They've got their struggles. But one of the good things they have going for them is the parity in the league. You don't know week to week who's going to win. You just have no idea. So that's why people watch.
Well, yeah, each roster has 53 players on it, unlike basketball where there's 11 or 12 or 15. So many different guys have to contribute to the effort in football, and that's why there's so much parity.
Yeah. So anyway, kind of a interesting weekend there as far as football goes. Personally, we had a nice weekend. We had a wedding here. One of our good friends, Abraham Blondeau, got married yesterday. And you know him from the radio. He's been on the radio with us quite a bit.
Exactly.
And so he I think enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. It was a nice wedding and a nice day for it. So those are always exciting to see. So a good weekend overall. Had some rain here in the Oklahoma City area on, I guess it was Saturday night. And today we woke up to cool temperatures. I think fall is officially here, right? Yeah. So I can never remember if it is or not.
Well, from what it felt like, I don't know either.
Okay.
Yeah. It's brisk out there.
It feels good. It feels like fall.
I was chilled.
Yeah, this morning I was getting ready, and my wife came in, and she was very serious, and she's like, "We must open the windows now." And so I was like, "Whoa, yes, of course." So, caught me off guard, but it was very comfortable. Anytime you can open the windows and turn the air conditioning off, that's great. That's money in the bank, mm-hmm. And it feels good. So we're enjoying some nice weather here. Hopefully you're having some good weather where you are. There were some floods continuing up there in the Midwest and Wisconsin and that area. So some places not doing as well, but hopefully it's good where you are. Huge night tonight, debate, Trump and Clinton. I was thinking, Grant, you know, I'm getting old because I'm actually kind of interested in this.
I know,
you
me
know,
too.
As a kid, and they used to come on, I'm like, oh, come on, I don't care about this. Now I do. Now I'm interested.
It's hard to figure out for me if it's maybe I've grown up a little bit or if it's just because it's so divisive this year that you just don't know what's going to happen. But I'm way more interested than I have been as well.
Yeah, it's a combination of things, I think. I mean, there's Donald Trump's a really interesting personality, mm-hmm. very outspoken. Hillary Clinton has had health problems. So there's a lot of intrigue about it, and just to see what happens, to see what's said. Boy, I don't know if anything of real value will come out of it in terms of what people say, but it'll be entertaining, I think, mm-hmm. if nothing else. So that'll be going on, of course, Monday evening. They're saying it's going to be one of the most watched, I think, in 100 million people. So that would be a huge turnout in terms of viewership.
Right. Donald Trump has never even done a one-on-one debate in his life, so it's going to also be interesting to see how he handles that. In the Republican primaries, a lot of the candidates were tearing each other down, but there were like 10 on the stage, and Donald Trump could basically be quiet and then interject kind of an alpha male type comment whenever he wanted to. Now he's going to have to really expound a lot more on his issues, which I think is one of the flaws that he has right now is that he hasn't gotten too specific about anything. And on the other hand, like with the Democratic primaries or the Democratic debates, all of the candidates were so nice to each other that Hillary Clinton hasn't really faced much opposition yet on stage. So it's going to be interesting to see how they adjust to the new circumstances now.
For sure. Yeah. And I don't think, I don't know that Hillary Clinton is considered to be a great debater. I don't know. I suppose she's had her fair share of debates, but some guys in the past that have been in these debates have been very, if nothing else, have been quick on their feet, and they've been very, just personable. And I don't know that she is considered personable, but yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens. And one thing about Donald Trump, he has confidence for days.
Oh, yes.
He's a confident individual, so we'll see how that plays out tonight. Over the weekend, a few deaths. Arnold Palmer died, 87, so he had a good long life. Famous golfer, of course. A couple of little interesting quips about him. It says, the world has likely never seen anybody who loved golf more than Palmer did. He played or hit balls virtually every day of his life. His late first wife used to say that her husband would not last long if he could no longer fly his own plane, because he liked to fly, or hit balls. Palmer gave up his pilot license, but with great reluctance, in 2014, but he was still hitting balls up until his final days. So it's kind of neat. He had something he loved to do, even though he hadn't played professionally for quite a while. He still liked to do it, and he got out there, and it's probably one of the reasons that he lived longer. He had a passion, something he enjoyed. And they say when Palmer, he was a paint salesman at the time, rocked the sport in 1954 by winning the U.S. amateur over an Oxford-educated blue blood, Robert Sweeney. Palmer's father told him, "You did good, boy." That was the first time, I guess, he said anything positive to him. According to the write-up, his dad was not very expressive, I guess. Deacon Palmer, the father, did not talk to Arnold about hitting high shots or low shots or fades or draws. Deacon told his son merely to pick out a target and swing as hard as he could.
I love it.
He could have been a boxer, too.
Exactly. Same advice, different sports.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting because they get very scientific about golf and a lot of sports. And then you get the old school guys that just say, well, hit it at that hole. I'm not sure which one's better.
Throw the ball in that basket.
Yeah, nowadays it's all about advanced statistics, right? You know, and it's funny because sometimes I'll try to read one of those sports write-ups about something, and I'm just bored halfway through. I think, I don't even know what these things mean anymore.
Right.
All these different acronyms and so forth for advanced statistics. And I'm like, so is he good at basketball or no? Right?
It's I can like watch making it. Making up new statistics every day. You could say the nerds have taken over sports. And made it a little bit less interesting, I think, because you can't keep up with all these stats unless you spend all day researching what they even mean. They throw them into an article with like their abbreviation and don't tell you what it stands for. So one article would take a couple hours to read if you looked up all the stats and what they mean.
Yeah, maybe overthinking it somewhat.
Quite a bit,
although
probably.
I did see, sometimes you'll see us, they have sports science videos mm-hmm. that they do. And sometimes those are interesting where you see how good someone is in terms you maybe didn't think of it before. Like they did one on LeBron James, and they showed like how much of the court he could cover because of his size and speed, how fast he could close out a three-point shooter, and how much of an arc the ball had to have for him not to block it. Like all these things that you just know by watching, like, oh, he blocks shots. But just showing how they did different things, that was kind of interesting. But I prefer to just watch the game. I think I can determine if the guy's good or not.
Yeah, sports science is a pretty good platform for showing advanced statistics because it brings science into it, something that we've all learned in school before. We don't all learn advanced statistics. That's more of a college-level course. So when you just read an article with all these stats in it, it's a little bit harder to relate to than seeing it in action on a TV show.
Yeah, I think they probably just run out of things to write about.
Yeah.
And they've got to fill the space, so they write about advanced statistics. Over the weekend, also, just more violence. Friday night, I guess it was, there was a shooting out there in Washington State in a mall, and several people killed out there. Kind of one of those situations where, it really rocks people because you don't expect someone to just open fire in a mall. He's appearing in court, the gunman, today, and they'll find out more, I guess, when they caught him. He was zombie-like, as they said, just kind of, he didn't have any weapons on him. He was just walking near his home, I guess, and didn't say anything. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see why he did what he did. He has a violent past, from what they said. He's from Turkey. He's been here in the U.S. for a while. But just a strange situation and a scary one out there in Washington State.
Yeah, that's right. That's pretty scary. A lot of these shootings, I just wonder, how do people react now when they see these shootings going on in the news all the time? You can't really predict where the next one's going to happen, and it's kind of hard to stop it unless everyone's carrying a gun, basically.
Yeah, really, really just strange situation. My little bit more interest for myself, because my wife is from that area. She spent a lot of time in that mall over the years growing up, and so for her it was strange. Like, I know that mall. I know those stores. And so it's a place you know and you're familiar with, and all of a sudden people are getting killed there. Mm-hmm. So, and then this morning, one of the headlines here is, this is from Houston. Gunman injures several in Houston, suspect shot by police. I think the numbers are kind of changing. There was somewhere between 6 and 9. It kind of bounces around. But people were injured when a shooter opened fire in a Southwest Houston shopping center on Monday morning. The suspected shooter was shot and killed by police, authorities confirmed on Twitter. Those who were wounded in the attack were being transported to area hospitals. This, again, is a random, it appears to be random. People were just driving, and all of a sudden, bullets are flying past and into their vehicles, and people getting hit, and some just, hit arms and legs and so forth, and some a little more serious, I guess. A nearby homeowner told Fox News his wife woke up to gunshots at 6:30 a.m., shortly thereafter, police were seen going into a nearby condo. One witness told ABC 13 the shooter fired 3 or 4 shots into the front window of her car and also shot the side window of the vehicle. And so, again, it seems random. You know, people were just driving down the street here. One person that was there says, as I was driving by Law Street, I suddenly heard a big explosion. I covered myself, accelerated, and tried to get out of there. I did not know if someone was following me or trying to shoot me. I felt the hot air. So, again, you're just driving, and all of a sudden, you're in the firestorm. You don't know what's going on. And so, we don't know anything about this at this point, why this happened. Of course, the gunman was shot, so maybe they'll never know. But it seems random, and that gets pretty scary.
Mental instability is a big problem with a lot of these shootings as well. Obviously, probably every shooting, because you can't necessarily take a gun and start shooting it at people unless you have some type of problem. It doesn't even have to be sort of a radical ideology in some cases, because if you're upset or depressed and you don't have much of a purpose for living anymore, sometimes that's what people choose to do.
Yeah, really, it's like we can't even digest one event and then another one's happening. Mm-hmm. So, interesting there. Of course, Houston, a lot of us have been through that area, and I don't know if I've been right in this exact area, but I do remember driving through Houston. There's a lot of traffic, and boy, something like that happens. Yeah, you just don't know what's going on. So, pretty scary situation there. Interesting write-up here from thenationalinterest.com, a little bit of a longer piece, but a few quotes that are pretty good. What if Muslim immigrants don't want to be like us? It's a good question. And the author goes into some of the history of the political parties in the U.S. He goes all the way back to the Whig Party. They're not around anymore, by the way. They will not be at the debate tonight, as far as I know. The Whigs. But he goes back to some of the ideologies and some of the thinking of these different political parties. But then he has a couple of interesting comments here. He says, we are told to remember that the granddaughters of the families who emigrated from highly stratified and religiously oppressive Italy's south now wear a bikini when they go to the beach, as do the granddaughters of the ultra-Orthodox Jews who immigrated to America from Eastern Europe. Why shouldn't that happen to the granddaughters of the Muslim immigrants from Egypt? So he's looking at American society today. Oh, the women wear bikinis. There's, you know, homosexuality, all these things. And the ideology or the thinking of the liberal left is that that's the way it's going, and people will automatically kind of adapt to that. And they point back to other people that have come in over the years. Well, look, they came in. they had some different views, but now everyone's doing the same thing. And as he brings out here, that's not what is happening with those from the Muslim community. They're actually going backwards in terms of further back into their past and becoming more strict with their beliefs, while the West just runs the other direction from religion. And so he asks that question, what if they don't want to be like us? Then what happens?
It's kind of strange to compare an Italian to a Muslim when a lot of Muslims have a very strict upbringing with the rules they follow. And a lot of them, there are some who get into more extreme beliefs. To think that just because they move to a different part of the world is going to undo beliefs that they've learned from a young age is a bit unrealistic on our part.
Yeah. He says here that if you go back, like I mentioned there, and look at the Muslims, he said their grandmothers growing up in the 1950s in, say, Alexandria, actually looked more like us in the West, wearing the latest European fashion and a spiffy swimsuit on the beach. It's their granddaughters who are now wearing veils, the hijab, and the burkini to make sure they don't look like us. So it's the exact opposite pattern. He says, so while the liberal West has been opening its doors to Muslim immigration, shrinking Christian communities in the Middle East are being decimated, and its members, facing a radical Islamic assault, are forced to leave countries where their ancestors had resided before the Arab invasion. He says liberals cannot accept the idea that many Muslims living in the West don't want to be like us. And if anything, they detest the liberal and secular values that prevail in the United States and Europe. That's a pretty good insight, I think. So what do you have? You have a culture clash, right?
It's pretty dangerous to bring people like that here when they hate everything about this way of life. And it also makes me question our nation's motive for bringing in nearly all Muslim refugees from that part of the world, a part of the world that is at war, but most of the victims there are Christians.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see why we're doing this, or to think about why we're doing this with letting just so many people come in. Finally, he says, and as multiculturalism becomes a form of secular religion in the West, many liberals also try to deal with their cognitive dissonance by insisting on the preservation, if not the celebration, of what he calls regressive Muslim traditions. Liberal intellectuals who spend much of their time denigrating evangelical Christians and warning of their plans to challenge the rights of women and gays become enraged if someone dares to criticize Muslim traditions. They say you're Islamophobic. So it's such a weird thing.
Yeah, and the reality is Islam and Christianity have a lot of beliefs in common. Obviously, those are divergent paths, but both have a negative view on homosexuality. Both of them have much more strict ways of living than kind of the lawless liberal left does. But at the same time, you see the liberals and the Muslims kind of allying themselves against the Christians. The Muslims may hate the liberals, but they hate Christians even more. And if the Christians are out of the way, the liberals are going to be surprised when the Muslims turn their wrath on them.
Yeah, it's a culture clash for sure. And but I thought it was a good point that he brought out, that multiculturalism is a form of secular religion in the West.
And it never works, it seems.
No, historically it just never does. And we're going further in the West. We're going further away from what would be considered traditional Christian values. And the Muslims are going more back to the letter of their law, which, if you look at it, you know, what's the reality? They're fighting the infidels, which is everybody who doesn't believe what they believe. Not a popular message today, but that's the truth of it.
And they're winning, too, because they know they're at war. The Muslims know they're at war right now, and their enemy doesn't even want to acknowledge that a war is going on. So they're going to keep taking advantage of that until someone finally wakes up and tries to stop it.
Yeah, really interesting write-up. It's a good one if you get a chance to go through it. It's at thenationalinterest.com. Some good points there. Maybe not everything, of course, exactly on the ball, I would think, but he has some interesting points. Here's again the back into the social justice excitement that we're in today. That's, that's another secular religion, right? Social justice.
Seems like it, yeah.
White students denounced as racist and white supremacist by their classmates because they, well, we'll just read the article and find out why. Why don't I just read this to you? Students from the University of Kansas Young America's Foundation just learned the hard way that those who advocate for, quote, safe spaces and trigger warnings for themselves aren't as courteous about other people's feelings. It's hard to be concerned about your neighbor's feelings when you're worried about your own feelings. Thursday night, the University of Kansas YAF asked students who supported, quote, safe spaces to debate the topic politely with several young conservative KUYAF members. The event called Stand With Me was in response to a video and a poem posted by a transgender student who claimed to have been harassed and berated as she, which I guess would be he, was walking across campus. Mm-hmm. So there was a poem. It's have problems ever been solved with poems? Do you remember that ever happening?
Probably not.
I don't recall.
Maybe a marital dispute here and there.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, speaking from experience, no, I'm
no,
just kidding.
Not yet. It's only been 3 months today.
3 month poem. The YAF had anticipated some protests, but what they got was a complete meltdown, clearly inspired by these trigger warning group people. A group of social justice warriors invaded the meeting, screaming obscenities, verbally abusing the YAF students, calling them racist and white supremacist, lecturing students about their white privilege, and even berating the students for holding the event. So they tried to have a debate about safe spaces and so forth, and they were attacked within their safe space and were accused of being racist and white supremacists.
That's terrible. Yeah, the Young America's Foundation, they host a lot of prominent conservative speakers on these different college campuses, and it's pretty common to see the social justice warriors invade those meetings and just shout the speaker down. The speaker usually doesn't stand for it for very long, but they shout and they paint their faces and they yell and they scream and they beat drums and they march across the room. Until they're finally escorted out. But how can you think that you're right when you can't even bear to hear the other side? You have no confidence in what you believe, and so you have to actually silence the other side.
That's a tremendous point. If you're so confident in your side and your opinion on it, wouldn't you want to have a debate and talk about it? A couple of comments on the article that I thought were interesting from people that read it. One said, those protesters need to learn that free speech is a two-way street. That's a great point, because they'll always cry about free speech, but don't you dare say anything. What? It's not free speech for you, and everyone else is silent.
Right.
Yeah, they'll probably say, well, you can say whatever you want. We'll just scream at you and beat the drum.
Exactly. Yeah, I was actually pretty irritated on Friday because my favorite baseball team, the Seattle Mariners, suspended Steve Clevenger for the rest of the season without pay. I don't know if you saw this,
no.
But basically he saw the riots in Charlotte, and he pointed out on Twitter that there were black people beating up white people because a black thug was shot by a black police officer. He then cursed and said, "That cracks me up. Keep kneeling for the anthem."
Right.
That's what he said on Twitter. So it was all facts, because the blacks were beating up whites when the whites had nothing to do with it. And then later on he said, "Black Lives Matter, you are pathetic. Obama, you are pathetic." And then he said, "Everyone involved should be locked up like animals."
Wow.
So maybe not the best worded,
no.
But the same thing. The thing is, the liberal left, they decided to just say, "Oh, this guy's a total bigot, racist."
Right.
He was talking about the people tearing apart a city, and yet, oh, he's talking about all black people now.
Well, that's the thing. It's the bully mentality.
Yeah.
So the Mariners, of course, would be quick to not want to get anyone upset. So yeah, you suspend a guy. So.
Yeah.
Yep, it is a two-way street. I mean, if you want to say what you want to say, then other people have the right to as well.
Mm-hmm.
One other comment about it says, it's a dangerous world that's been created by giving in to these people who think anyone who disagrees with them are racists or bigots. And that's the truth of it.
Yeah.
What qualifies someone as a quote-unquote racist is they disagree with them, their thinking. That's all it is. Or that they're bigots or whatever.
It happens so often now. Like, there's just examples every week, it seems like, where, oh, I don't agree with you, so you're a racist. It just comes out in the news all the time. And it's just like that argument should be shot down right away, because there's hardly anything more dangerous to call somebody today when we have race riots in the streets and people burning cities based on that one word.
Yeah. So that's some of what's going on the college campuses, and now it's gotten into the sports world as well, and it's just, and nobody has the courage to stand up and say anything, and those that do have the courage to say something, even if it's not worded well, as that player, they're immediately suspended. And what is that warning there to everybody? Don't you say a thing.
Right.
You agree with our opinion or else. You know, there's that new show, Undisputed, I think it's on Fox Sports or whatever, and a couple of the guys on there, they're getting into the race issues and they're giving their big opinions, and they were talking about things, and I found it funny that their ratings are terrible. I read an article this morning that people aren't watching.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, there you go. Why is that? Maybe because, sorry, but you're paid to talk about sports. You know, I know they want to all be intellectuals, but they're getting paid to talk about sports.
Right.
And they're there because they used to play the sport. They're not there because they're a Rhodes Scholar, you know, but yet they want to jump in and give their big thoughts on it. And that's why people don't watch, I think.
Yeah, the low ratings are actually surprising, because there was a ton of excitement about that show going on Fox Sports. And I've seen almost every day they have a new segment about race relations, and it's always very liberal. It's always, you know, the police are targeting minorities every single day. And it's like, can we please try to see how this even ties back to sports at all? Because it's hard to connect them.
Right. And then the white host on there, who shall remain nameless, he's always apologizing for being white.
Yeah, I know.
Constantly. I'm so sorry.
It's unbelievable.
Sorry for what? You know, it's just,
you didn't do anything wrong.
That we know of. So other than have a bad show. But
other than being born with the wrong pigment, apparently.
Yeah. I think it's getting pretty ridiculous out there. You know Al Sharpton is, right?
Yes.
Familiar with Al Sharpton. He, for some reason, has a TV show.
On MSNBC. Yeah, I saw it recently.
It's a piece of work. But and even the liberal media makes fun of him. Mm-hmm. But somehow he's still on there. And anyway, a lot of thoughts about him, but we'll just not get into it. His daughter, though, is in the mix now. This is from the Of Course This Is Happening segment. Al Sharpton's daughter sues city over foot injury. So she's learned from her dad that if you make a lot of noise and stir the pot, maybe something will happen. Al Sharpton's daughter admitted in a legal deposition that she danced, pranced, and jetted around to romance her beau after supposedly suffering permanent damage to her ankle when she stumbled in a city pothole. The lady's name is Dominique Sharpton. She gave this deposition, a transcript of which was obtained by the New York Post, which is where this article is from. In her $5 million lawsuit against the city, $5 million, she reveals startling new details about her escapades following the injury. So she stepped in a pothole, and she claims she injured her foot beyond repair, even though she's done all this stuff since. And she wants $5 million. It's a lot of money. You ever walk on a road that's not even?
Yes.
Like every day of your life?
I never hurt myself from it either.
And I look ahead and down,
yes.
And I try to pay attention to.
Same with driving. Avoid the potholes.
Try to avoid them, yeah. She admitted that she changed into party clothes and attended a two-hour concert as soon as she had her injury. But then after that, it was too much, apparently. When she was asked if she was a runner before, because she said she can't run now, and they said, well, were you a runner before? And she said, well, not necessarily. She said, but if I needed to do it and exercising or something like that, I was capable of it. Now I can't. So she's mad that she can't run, supposedly, even though she does run. but they asked her if she's a runner. She said, no, but, you know, in case I ever decided to.
She's regretting now not exercising when she had the chance. Now her foot has forever prohibited her from doing so.
It's too late. When she went to the hospital for it, they said there was nothing broken. She underwent physical therapy. She wore a therapeutic boot. And she used crutches for a few weeks and got an injection. So that's worth $5 million, apparently.
Oh.
Eventually, she did have surgery for some ligament tears, but the injuries didn't stop her from visiting her fiancé in Miami a dozen times a year, dancing with her dad, working out, touring the country in a play, And as previously reported, hiking a mountain in Bali and dancing in heels. She has an incredibly high pain threshold, apparently.
Indeed. That's impressive.
Trying to explain away the heels, she claimed under oath that she can only wear them for a short amount of time. Yeah, well, most women wearing high heels for days on end. She said it's really annoying. Why does the city owe you $5 million? Because it's annoying. Where can we make the check out to? She tried to downplay her two-hour hike in Bali, saying she was helped by two people who had to take a lot of breaks. She says, there were times when I didn't think I could make it. Again, where do we send the check?
Way to persevere.
So anyway, I just thought it was ridiculous. I think some of those lawsuits just get crazy. And then just the fact that her dad's a bit of an instigator as well, and she's jumping in and instigating also.
Yeah, the victim mentality just lives on every day. We see another example of it. And I did see his show recently, only for about 10 minutes, but he seemed he asked some good questions. He had a very anti-Donald Trump guy on there, of course, but he did seem objective for the short time I saw him. But it's still amazing that a professional agitator like him, whose main job is to stir up, I guess, black animosity, has a show on a big time TV network. It's a bit suspicious and surprising.
Yeah. But really he should highlight everything, I guess, that they would consider to be right with America, because you can do anything, apparently.
Yeah.
Have no experience, no real, ability at it.
Well, yet you can say have a show. He's really successful.
Yeah, he is.
In a way. I mean, I'm sure he's very rich, and his daughter might be if she wins that lawsuit.
I don't imagine she'll win that, but who knows? But I was just thinking, well, we all walk down streets with potholes in it, you know, or ride your bike or drive a car. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
There might be a time where there's something that would need to be done, but even if they owed her, what would be the, you know, $5 million? Where do you get that from?
Yeah, that's the thing with these lawsuits. It's like the end amount of money is totally pulled out of a hat, completely random. Because of emotional distress, probably. That's the main reason why they would claim that they need all this money, because they're traumatized for some reason. But if you step on a pothole, you should immediately blame yourself for being clumsy and then maybe make a call to the city to possibly fix the road. But it shouldn't be they should pay you because you stepped in it.
Yeah, and just the argument that I can't do something supposedly that maybe I would do sometime. Well, that opens up a whole new realm for all of us, doesn't it? You know, maybe someday I'll decide to, you know, go through the schooling and become a doctor. And now I can.
You've stopped me.
Yeah. I mean, well, how do we know what you'll do?
I'm being oppressed.
One other story is kind of interesting. You got to be careful with the selfies. There's a video out there of a man. He was attacked by a python while taking a selfie.
Oh.
I saw the video. When anyone's performing a death-defying stunt, it's only natural to say to want to memorialize it in pictures or selfies. As it turns out, even when you think you're being safe, something can go wrong. So basically what happened is that they found this in India, they found this python, and it was in a hotel. And so they went in and they got it. And three guys were carrying it. And so this other guy walks up and he gets close to it and he's trying to take a selfie and the thing just launches out and bites him right on the arm. Oh. So anyway, it's kind of an interesting.
So he knew it was there
and
still took the risk of taking a picture right next to it.
I guess he thought the other people had it subdued, you know, like, oh, it'll be fine. And that thing just it bit him pretty good. So anyway, if you're interested in seeing a man get bit by a python, that's on the internet. And it'd be an interesting picture, too. I don't know if he got a good one or not. Don't take a selfie near the mouth of a snake.
Just
not a good idea.
So dumb.
The Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG today. Make sure that you do listen for that. Great programs. As always, we have a couple of segments. And the segments today, they're a two-part series. He Was Right, Part 1 and 2. And that deals with the prophecies that were talked about by Herbert W. Armstrong from the Bible many years ago. And now a lot is happening that's fulfilling those, hence the title He Was Right, because those things are happening now. So make sure you listen for those, and if you'd like to see the videos, you can see those online at thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host Brent Nachtigall filling in for Stephen Fleury. Program from Jerusalem, Israel. He had a pretty exciting announcement. He's going to be doing a new hour-long weekly show that'll be here on KPCG. It'll be coming from over there in Jerusalem. and talking about a lot of the events going on there, specifically in Jerusalem. So they are on the ground floor of all this activity. So that'll be a new show to look forward to coming up here on KPCG in the next, I don't know, few weeks or so. And it'll be a Sunday show. So
that's really exciting. Yeah. Has some fresh weekend content as well.
Yeah, some something new for the weekend. So that'll be exciting, and there'll be more details on that as it comes out. He also talked about some about Donald Trump, and if he gets elected, will Jerusalem be recognized as the capital of Israel? They say yes, but you never know. People have said that before, and then it hasn't happened. And he gives a personal story about his daughter, who was just born recently, and her passport, it says Jerusalem, Jerusalem. It doesn't say Jerusalem, Israel, because it's not recognized as the capital of Israel.
Not even by the Jews who presumably issued the passport?
It's not authorized that way or allowed to be done that way. So there's I don't know all the ins and the outs of it, but basically the gist there is that, you know, the international community, the United States, doesn't recognize it as the capital of Israel.
Of all the things people get offended about, that's actually offensive. For everyone who lives there, that should be infuriating.
So really interesting program today, and again, that ties in. It's a great kind of primer maybe for the debates tonight. Some, I don't know if that'll come up at all. There's so much for them to talk about. I don't think they'll have time to get to the topics, mm-hmm. the real topics, because they got to unpack all the lies. You lie. Well, you lied too. Well, you lied again. And they'd all be right.
Creative zinger insults thrown in there as well.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. But it's a really good Trump Daily Radio show, and that'll be coming up here in a bit on KPCG, or the archives are at kpcg.fm. Grant's got you got a really interesting story here for us. There's a headline before we get to yours that kind of ties in. CNN, their headline is "The Weekend: America's Newspapers Called Donald Trump a Liar." So there was four, I guess, papers this weekend that came out with big things calling Donald Trump a liar. They might be right. I don't know. But you know who else is a liar? The person he's running against.
And the person who lies more seriously is clearly Hillary Clinton, because of what has been at stake over the years with her.
Yeah, position-wise.
Yeah.
And so this ties into this write-up you've got for us. The title is "The FBI Investigation of Emailgate Was a Sham." You don't say. NSA analyst says we now have incontrovertible proof the Bureau never had any intention of prosecuting Hillary Clinton. You mean it was all a put-on?
Yeah, I guess so. They putting Emailgate in this title. I'm so tired of every scandal having a gate attached to the end of the name. Like, I feel like Richard Nixon was run through the mud with that anyway, but different story.
We should have a controversy about the Golden Gate Bridge, and then we'd call it Golden Gate Gate.
Just make it redundant. Exactly. Yeah. This is an NSA analyst who is, I guess, presumably he's the one writing this, and he's saying that from the moment the Emailgate scandal went public over a year ago, it was pretty obvious that the FBI didn't really want to prosecute Hillary Clinton or her friends. And it talks about the dangerous precedent set here with the FBI basically becoming politicized. It used to be that the FBI would float above political leanings and just, you know, police the country the way it's supposed to. But this time, it could not really do its job, at least where high-ranking Democrats are concerned, he writes. It says, in early July, when FBI Director James Comey announced that the FBI would not be seeking prosecution of anyone on Team Clinton over Emailgate, the Bureau had turned its back on its own traditions of floating above partisan politics in pursuit of justice, basically tarnishing this institution that used to have no bias, really. And it just makes you wonder, how is the FBI going to operate under either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? What's going to change when the next president is elected? It says here that they gave out a lot of pardons. What do they call those? Immunity, I believe it is. Mm. They gave out immunity to a lot of the people who Hillary Clinton used with the email scandal, including the person who actually set up her email server, her private server. he theoretically was a small fish, and so he could give them information while not being incriminated himself. The issue there being, though, that this IT guru actually decided to blow off two separate subpoenas from Congress after receiving immunity. So what is Congress really going to do to bring out the truth when this guy doesn't even think it's necessary to come before them just because he's gotten immunity already?
Yeah, in a way, I feel bad for Congress to some extent, because they have the lowest approval ratings, or blamed for everything. And yet when they try to do something, let's say with this situation, they're just ignored. And so it is interesting, because the power that they would have held at some point seems to be kind of evaporating.
Right.
And again, it kind of gets down to, like, okay, well, who's the ultimate authority here? Because they say, well, we want you to come and, you know, we're telling you to come and testify. And they say, nah.
Can't get in trouble, so
and
no.
Then nothing happens. Yeah. And so you sit there thinking, well, okay, now what?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the strange thing about it all, because it's the breakdown of the rule of law. What law is anybody following? Is there a law? Is there somebody that will enforce a penalty if you don't follow the law? And yeah. It seems pretty murky in that regard.
It seems like there's just no fear of disobedience now. The House Oversight Committee of Congress this week just recommended that he be cited for contempt of Congress because he didn't show up after those subpoenas. But predictably enough, the vote went along strictly partisan lines. Not a single Democrat thought that his offenses were worthy of any sort of punishment. And presumably this IT guy knew that Congress would not vote for him to get in trouble for this.
Well, the way it appears right now is that the left wants Hillary to get in. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to stop that, other than, I guess, her losing the election, if that actually legitimately happens. I don't know. But any of these things that come out, even when, you know, any of us would read the headlines, I always kind of think, like, oh, who cares? But they're not going to do anything about it, you know, because she's the candidate. And now there should still be rule of law. And no matter who you are, if you break the law, there should be consequences. But there aren't any consequences. And how long can that go on before you don't have a civilization anymore?
Right.
Not very long.
Yeah, under normal circumstances in past years, you would think Congress would still prosecute a person like this. But it goes along with the media sort of compromising its standards, because they're so desperate for Donald Trump not to take office that they'll do whatever it takes. In this case, Congress is doing whatever it takes, or at least the Democratic side is doing whatever it takes, so that Donald Trump does not make it in. Hillary Clinton gets in instead of him. So the FBI director was already made to look a fool, basically, by this lower level IT guy who set up the private email server once he didn't show up for two separate subpoenas. But then it turns out also that the FBI granted immunity to much bigger fish in the Clinton political tank. Three more people got a pass from the Bureau in exchange for their cooperation. So there was a Hillary Clinton lawyer, a State Department IT boss, and Cheryl Mills specifically was the big one, because for decades, for about 25 years, she has gotten the Clintons out of scandal after scandal.
Hmm. Well, even the president's been in the mix here, because on, I think, Friday, they always like to dump all their documents on Friday, so no one pays attention, I guess. But, you know, he claimed that they said, well, how did you hear about the email thing? He said, oh, just I heard it on the news. It's funny how I just heard it on the news. As if he wouldn't know otherwise. And then it turns out he was actually emailing around that server way before then using a fake name. But still, that alone, shouldn't that be somewhat punishable? I mean, isn't that wrong? But nobody, I mean, it makes the headlines some places for a day, and then it's pushed out, and then the next thing happens. And so there's been so many of these things that have just gone over the waterfall of information that if you look down at the bottom of that in the pool down there, there's a lot of bad things down there.
Yeah.
But again, if you don't enforce the law at some point, where do you ever enforce it? I mean, you can't say, well, we've broken the law 100 times, but 101, you better, now we're going to get you. It's like, you know, it's like being at the store when you hear parents and their kids, like, I've told you 20 times, okay, is 21 going to be different, or are we just going to say it again, right? Same thing.
Yeah, exactly. This article does point out that instance with President Obama claiming he didn't know that Hillary Clinton was using a private server. And the article points out it should be pretty obvious for him when he's emailing a ClintonMail.com email address instead of a state.gov email address that, yes, she is using a private account instead of basically a State Department protected account.
They can just go back to the old argument they always like to use of, I don't understand this technology and these email addresses, and we don't know how this works. And so I haven't heard the White House say anything about it. As far as that report that he'd used it, I guess they're just going to ignore it.
Apparently, that's what it seems like. It is a pretty big deal, though, that they would grant immunity to three people who are so directly guilty in this email scandal. The IT guy, maybe you could understand because, you know, he's doing his job. He's paid to set up a computer. He doesn't know all the ins and outs necessarily of, you know, the legal workings of this situation. But those three top-level people, especially Cheryl Mills, should know better than doing what they did. House or chairman of the oversight committee, Jason Chaffetz, pronounced himself absolutely stunned that the FBI would grant immunity to Cheryl Mills. He only found out about it on Friday, but he said, no wonder they couldn't prosecute a case. They were handing out immunity deals like candy. So these people now can't get in trouble for the whole scandal, and therefore they don't really have to cooperate at this point because they're totally getting off scot-free.
That's so strange that you would give out immunities like that, because like you said, what's the end goal? If no one can get in trouble for it, then why even bother finding out what happened? Write a book later on? I mean, or to tell all of us so we know, like, yeah, they did something bad, but you can't do anything about it.
Right.
It's an interesting thing, except for the fact that, as the article points out, there was never any intention of doing anything about it. I mean, who didn't know that? That was pretty clear.
Pretty obvious, exactly. This Cheryl Mills actually did the exact same thing during a Clinton scandal called Whitewater in the 1990s. She basically used the dog ate my homework excuse and destroyed a lot of crucial documents in that case as well. So to give out an immunity to the same person who supposedly did this exact same thing 20 years ago, and who probably helped the Clintons destroy a lot of crucial emails this time around, it's very suspicious. It's clear that you would not want to give immunity to this person. She's an obvious culprit. You want to convict her and charge her with a crime, but not if you're not interested in prosecuting Hillary Clinton at all.
Right, and so the reason they do this, I think, is so they can say, when it comes up again, they can say, look, the FBI investigated, we've talked to a lot of people, we got to the bottom of this, and there was not enough to prosecute. And so people could think, oh, they looked at it and nothing was wrong. No, they kind of stirred the pot a little bit and said,
yeah. Yeah.
There was never any intention of doing anything, but this gives them a cover, a very bad one, a very poorly constructed one, but still, I guess it's good enough for some people.
It was really just a dead end. It was a smokescreen to make the people think that, oh, Hillary Clinton could actually get punished like a normal person for right. once, which has not ever happened the whole time that she has been in public office. This article also points out another interesting part of this, that all of her emails that are on file right now that have been retrieved will not come out until after the election in November. Wow. So she will already have taken office if she wins the election. And that's going to make all the difference in the world, because if she wins the election based on the people not knowing about the email scandal in full, then the FBI is obviously not going to prosecute her then, because they didn't prosecute her now when she isn't even the president yet. But if Donald Trump takes office, the FBI is probably going to start being a little more interested in it, like they should be, like they should have been all along. So really, Hillary Clinton's status as a free woman could be up for grabs in this election as well.
That's something that I'm sure they're very concerned about. Be very interesting. I'm just so tired of people saying, well, we'll release this information after, you know. Says who? Why can't you release it right now? Mm-hmm. They should be forced to release it right now.
If they have all of it, why is it so difficult to release it? Again, because whoever's involved desperately wants her to get elected. They know that if the emails come out now, she won't get elected and she'll be prosecuted as a criminal. It's amazing because it seems like the FBI, after all these years of being free of politics, has now become a tool of the left right now. That will probably change if Trump takes office.
Yeah, that happened with the IRS. It happened with a few other groups, too. So it's a really bad situation there. But the thing, too, is they tried to, with the email hack that they said maybe Russia was behind or whatever, one of the things they came out with and said, the left said, was, well, you know, this favors Donald Trump, you know, and you don't want him in there because the Russians are involved. Maybe so. I don't know. But still, do you want somebody in office that is owing everybody for their freedom? I mean, who do you owe? That's the question. That's what I always wonder. Well, okay, clearly it was kind of set up here. So who do you owe, and what do you got to pay him back? That's a question that I wonder about.
And aren't we still waiting on that October surprise from WikiLeaks?
Oh, yeah.
For Hillary Clinton. So I don't think she's done with the scandals yet, because there should be more leaks coming out pretty soon that would incriminate her even more.
At this point, what would it have to be for it to, like, do anything? You know, there's been so much already. I don't even know what there would have to be. My prediction, though, I'll make a prediction here, is that if the question comes up in the debate about it, the response will be, we've already discussed this. There's been a full investigation. Can we talk about the topics? I think that's...
Very important topic, though. Yeah. That's what's amazing, too, is so many people say, well, this is irrelevant. We've been talking about it for so long. Well, I think the character of the potential next leader should be called into question. It should be analyzed. And also the willingness or the unwillingness to keep the country secure. It's coming out here with her just divulging all these emails or letting them float around when they should be highly classified.
Yeah. And again, this isn't to say that the other side, that Donald Trump is, you know, this bastion of whatever. I'm sure there's a bunch of issues there too, but it's just, again, it's the situation we're in. And to have, you know, the media and one side throw the accusation of lies over at the right, or whatever you want to call it these days. I don't know how right they are as far as political leanings, but pot calling the kettle black here. I mean, come on now. You can't talk about lying. It just, it's a farce at this point.
Who knows? I mean, Donald Trump, if he had the same opportunities and was in the same government offices, maybe he would have all these scandals coming out now as well. But the reality is that hasn't happened. And so the candidate who needs more skepticism directed toward her is Hillary Clinton. That's just how it is. Donald Trump, we just don't know exactly how honest or how corrupt he might be. Hillary Clinton, we very much do know from a long track record.
What do you think happens if she gets sick and she can't do the debate? What do they do? Cancel it? They have a stand-in?
I hear that it is very possible that they could cancel a debate, or they might actually put in Gary Johnson. I think they want to go ahead with it, actually.
Yeah.
No matter what, because it's going to bring in huge ratings, maybe slightly less without her, but still. And maybe that's the only reason she's running still, despite her health issues. She knows that if she doesn't become president, she's prosecuted as a criminal the way she should have been already.
It's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds. This is a write-up that you can find there. The FBI investigation of Emailgate was a sham. And where is that from? I didn't get the byline.
I forget. Let's see. I have it right here. If Observer Politics.
ObserverPolitics.com. Yes. So you can read the rest of that if you want to. And it's information that's out there. I mean, it's very, very public, and people are reading about it. So very interesting, and it's a good write-up. There's another one that we don't have time to get to today, but it'd be worth looking at if you get a chance, from the Business Insider, and it says, we haven't seen this happen since right before World War II, talking about just what's going on in the world, the way that there's division, and then certain nations are pulling back together in Europe. It's an interesting write-up. There's also a video that they're releasing about it, too. Probably some good information there. I'm not probably totally accurate, but just from the political standpoint of what's going on, looking at what's happening, George Friedman is the one that's behind a lot of that, and he has some good insight. So that's a write-up from the Business Insider that you can look at, and then there's some videos about that too. So lots happening, and people are paying attention, even people that are just kind of out there looking at the political trends. So make sure you listen for the Key of David program on He Was Right. That ties right in with all of this. And the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up here in a little bit as well on KPCG. That'll do it for us on this Monday edition. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Monday. Getting back to work, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.